Pacifico, Phil Henry.
And it's the world-famous Phil Henry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this show, and we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't, so we go there for them. World-famous Phil Henry Show brought to you each and every night, Monday through Friday here from 10 to 1. And, of course, we are live on Phil TV in HD, and that is on our website, philhenryshow.com. A couple of things that we have for you on our website. We have Phil Henry's new home movies. That is the family's home movies that you should take a look at. We did I did kind of a little bit of a primer at 6 p.m. Pacific this evening for our backstage pass people, and so they saw the Henry family in all its glory as the story began. And we sort of went from the Canada. There was actually some black and white stuff from Canada in 1945, and then through the latter part of that decade on into the early 50s, and the subsequent. Well, I don't want to get into it because it's rather tawdry. I'm kidding, bud.
Yeah, you should say you're kidding.
Anyway, check it out at philhenryshow.com. This evening, we're going to talk a little bit about advertising, and we're going to talk about it with a guy that knows something about it. Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills is going to join us right now.
Ted of Beverly Hills, great to be with you this evening, Phil, in our regularly sponsored segment. And we do want to talk about product loyalty and customer loyalty.
Here at Ted's.
Tonight here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
And it's good to be with you, Ted. How is business?
You know what? Business is fantastic. And I'll tell you what, the economy, obviously, you've been reading the news. The economy is picking up. As a very well-known restaurateur here on the West Coast, and I'm very fortunate that I am known throughout much of the country among my colleagues. When business gets better, it automatically gets better with the people who have been traditionally the best ones at business. And so as things have picked up here a little bit, we have noticed that, Phil, here at Ted's of Beverly Hills. That's because of the very great service I think we've given people down through the years. And we certainly hope it will continue.
Now, you wanted to talk about product loyalty. You and I had a very interesting conversation. I want to let my audience in on this. About the Rush Limbaugh experience with advertisers when he went through this whole thing with this fluke lady and the slut comment and so on and so forth. He lost advertisers. They're now coming back, is my understanding.
Yeah, well, here is what I wanted to tell you and I want to tell your audience. And this is a classic example of a stand that he took that I thought was right. What happened was an advertiser dropped him, and when the controversy died down, the advertiser wanted back on the show, and Limbaugh wouldn't let the advertiser back on the show.
And now, what side of that do you stand on?
Well, I stand with the advertiser. I stand with the advertiser because they understandably dropped Limbaugh as a spokesman when he said things that they perceived would damage their product. Once the controversy around Rush Limbaugh began to simmer down a little bit, then they realized that it was a safe bet to go with Limbaugh, and they said to him, all right, we're going to use you again as a spokesperson. And Limbaugh, in what I thought was a show of arrogance, the likes of which I haven't seen, said no.
Yeah, Rush turned down this advertiser.
Yeah. And I thought that was suicidal. And I thought that it's emblematic of what's happening right now, Bill. The people, the customers out there, are right now going to have to go back to these businesses and show them that they support them, because as business picks up, these businesses will be able to be a little bit more select and a bit pickier as to who it is they want to serve.
And when Rush said to this advertiser, and I think the name of it is Sleep Train, am I right about that?
That's correct, yes.
They said, we would like you now to be our spokesperson again, Mr. Limbaugh. I guess they were satisfied that the controversy was not perhaps as serious as they thought. And
yeah, exactly. And they took a look at it, and they realized that, as the saying goes, the coast was clear, and that Limbaugh was now going to be told to come back and continue being a spokesman. And instead of taking the job back, which I believe not only was he lucky to have the job offered to him, but I think it was his duty, if not something that he should have been compelled to do, and instead he told them, no, I'm not going to do it.
Now, yeah, but now let's tell the audience his reasoning for this.
His reasoning was that he was an ingrate. He's got an ego the size of you-know-what.
That's not fair, Ted. The reason for this was simply Rush didn't feel it was smart to be taken off of an account by an advertiser because they say you are too controversial, and then to go back on that account because it looks like you are saying to your audience, they chastised me, and I recognize how wrong I was, and now I'm back being a spokesperson.
But what is exactly wrong with that?
Well, I think what's wrong with it is it makes someone like Rush Limbaugh, who is supposed to have credibility with his audience, who's supposed to have when you're doing that kind of a show, you have to have not only credibility, but I believe a strong point of view so that people have faith in what you're saying and will listen.
Well, I don't understand. You're saying, in other words, Rush Limbaugh turning around to an advertiser. Do you understand where we are these days? The economy now is just coming back. But a lot of people, a lot of consumers, during the very down times of this economy, Phil, I use a lot of these analogies. I hope you forgive me. But if business were, for instance, a hungry man lying in the street, a lot of these consumers would have stepped right on his face as they walked over him on their way to wherever. That's how business was treated by consumers during this down economy. Now, I'll give you another example.
I think that's a...
That's a what?
That is. I believe that's an absurd thing to say. I think that when an economy is down.
Hold on. Before you say anything, you know what I do for a living, right?
Of course.
All right. Well, tell people what I do for a living.
I know what you do.
Please tell people what I. I'm an advertiser. You're the host. I'm telling you now what I'd like you to do because this economy. You know, I've supported your show through this economy.
You own a restaurant.
I own a restaurant, so I think I know something about the consumer and their what they want and how loyal they are, how unloyal they are, why they're going to come back, are they not going to come back. All of these are very, very important questions, and they need to be answered in as expeditious a way as possible to redound, if you will, to the betterment or to the betterment of the business. Now, I'll give you another example. Disney debuted the movie John Carter, and I believe it was debuted last night. Do you have those facts?
I saw this story. Bud, did you want to get that?
Yeah, let's get the John Carter movie.
Yeah, the John Carter movie by Disney. Let me take a look here. Ted, go ahead.
Well, what I was going to say is Disney rolled out a $250 million movie this weekend. $250 million. Now, I want you to think about that. That is more money than at one time if you proposed. I remember when they proposed spending $200 million on Waterworld, and they wanted to lock Kevin Costner up in a lunatic asylum. You remember that, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, that was the early 90s, wasn't it?
That was the early 90s. And when they said they were going to spend $200 million on a film, they wanted to take Costner, the producer, everybody, and lock them in a lunatic ward. Now you have a movie that just debuted this weekend, John Carter. $250 million Disney went out and spent to try to give the people of this country and the people of this world some quality entertainment. That is a lot of money, Phil. That is $250 million. And guess what they were rewarded with? And this is what I'm talking about.
I heard the box office was not good.
Yeah, it was $5 million.
Wow.
$5 million. This is what I mean when I say that the consumer has not even the common decency to look at what these companies are going through, what these businesses are going through. They're like Rush Limbaugh. They look at a struggling business and they say, well, you know something? I don't care if you're having a hard time. You didn't do this and you didn't do this. There's some petty thing. And they, you know, to use a phrase that my friend Bob Robbins uses, they lift their leg to it. And that's what the consumer has done to Disney, and I think that's what they did. I believe that that is what Rush Limbaugh did to Sleep Train.
I think that we're missing here the consumer's point of view.
I know the consumer's point of view.
If you know it, I will just state it for the record, for the obvious. The consumer is saying, I'm not getting quality for my dollar.
Well, all right, so that, listen to what you just said, because that indicts the consumer even more. I'm not getting what I want for my dollar. Disney spent $250 billion. Are they getting what they want for their dollar?
They're the ones that made the movie.
No, I understand that.
They're the ones that marketed the film.
Not right. But are they getting what they want? A guy goes to the movies to the tune of the American public responded to this movie for $5 million, and it was a $250 million movie. That was the American consumer sticking it to Disney, not the other way around. And it is the consumer sticking it to Sleep Train when Rush says, on second thought, I'm not going to be your spokesman because you hurt my feelings. And
that's not why he said he's not going to be their spokesman.
Well, Phil, you and I both know that's what it boils down to. And it is what happens to me when someone comes into my restaurant and they say that our clams are what happened this evening. Somebody said the clams smelt or tasted, they used the word rancid, and they used that word loud enough whereby another table heard it. And that's what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about, there's not even the common courtesy to tell me that maybe they don't like our food so it isn't so loud everybody on the street hears it.
All right, Ted Bell is with us as we talk about consumer loyalty, product loyalty. What is there anything to this argument that the consumer owes loyalty to a brand? Disney spent $250 million to make a movie that the audience said, no, we don't want to see it. They only spent $5 million to go see the film. That's a stiff of a box office. You've got Ted Bell here, angry at customers who said that his seafood tasted rancid, loud enough so that other customers could hear it. And, of course, Rush Limbaugh with Sleep Train. So do you think you owe loyalty to a brand? 877-876-7445, 877-876-PHIL. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Tats of Beverly Hills Steakhouse, come on down.
A reminder, this portion of the Phil Hendry Show is brought to you by Ted Bell, Tats of Beverly Hills Steakhouse. And we really do our best for you. We would rather you not come into our restaurant, though, and badmouth our food.
Which is what happened last night, right?
It happened last night, and what I resented more than anything else was this man who stood by and watched his woman, I shouldn't say his woman, he watched his wife say to me, the clams taste rancid. And we're not a seafood place, Phil. This is the part that angers me. We're a steakhouse. We have seafood as a courtesy. So that when you come into a steakhouse, such as Ted's of Beverly Hills, which is known for its steak, and you order clams or you order oysters, you have, in my opinion, you've got a lot of guts walking up to me at the end of the evening and saying, your clams are rancid. This is a steakhouse.
Well, were they rancid? I mean, that's a...
Well, Phil, I'm the sponsor on your program, and you've asked me a question that's potentially explosive. I'd be happy to answer the question, but I don't know what good it does.
It would go a long way toward people, it would go a long way toward people having faith in your business.
All right, you ask the question.
Were the clams rancid?
No, they were not. No, they were not. She was a pain in the you-know-what from the minute she walked through the door. I don't eat clams, so I don't know what they're supposed to taste like. But I ate one of them, and it tasted fine.
Did you have any stomach problems, any nausea, any...
I just gave you the answer. I ate one of them, and it tasted fine. But the point that I'm making bigger than that, Phil, is this. Disney spent $250 million on a movie, and the audience didn't have the common courtesy or decency to go and see that film after the years that Disney has put in entertaining them, entertaining their children, being a virtual babysitter to their children. If you think about it, Disney, if Disney charged what the average babysitter charges for watching children, Disney would have, well, Disney now would be, in point of fact, you know, the old saying, he's got more money than God. I do believe they would have more money than God. I really do.
All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL as we talk about product loyalty here with Ted Bell from Ted's Beverly Hills. Let's go to a phone call. We have Richard on the line. Richard, you're on with Ted Bell. Go ahead, sir.
Ted, I just wanted to pass along through Phil. We just picked up this program in my market. This is about the third time
that yes, sir.
Phil's been on.
Yes, sir. What market are you in, sir? What market is that?
This is in the Baton Rouge market.
You're in the Baton Rouge, that's Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Okay.
That is correct. And your station is new. 107.3. It's new.
I don't care that much. I just wanted to know what market you're in.
Well, I'm
okay, but I do. I care.
Okay.
You don't have to go into a big speech.
I care, Ted. I'd like to know what station it is.
All right.
Well, Ted, you're not going to care for what else I have to say. I'm a retired management consultant. Had a extremely
That indicts you. If you're retired, then you're out of the mainstream. You don't really know what's...
Let's listen to the gentleman and see what he has to say.
I'm 39 years old, so I'm still functioning.
I doubt it. Well, your voice has... There's a dryness in your larynx that sounds older.
You know, that's practice. That's practice. Ted,
you
I just...
Practice
you
drying your larynx out?
I think you're nuts, Ted Bell. What you said makes no sense.
Well, sir, you're the one that's unemployed, not me.
Anybody.
And I'm saying...
No sense to anybody. Disney spends...
I don't think you can speak for everyone. I think you can speak for yourself, sir, and I think that that is what you're doing, and you're doing it very well. But Disney spent $250 million on this movie.
Right.
Did you go see it? No, you didn't see it.
Who cares?
I'll tell you something.
They
didn't have the common decency... They didn't have the common decency to go see a film that was produced by a company that has babysat your kids.
Ted, what difference does it make if somebody makes a bad product and nobody uses it, or in this case, nobody goes to see it?
It was $250 million. Disney makes bad products? Are you going to sit there and tell me that Disney... You know, people are doing twists and flips to get into their amusement parks, to ride on their roller coasters, to get pictures with what do you call it, the mouse?
Mickey Mouse.
Mickey Mouse. Mickey Mouse. And you're telling me that all of a sudden they're a crap can company and they make lousy products? No, that doesn't fly.
I'm saying that the specific instance you gave could apply to many companies and to other Disney products. Disney has made bombs before this, and people did not recognize it. Listen, I've tried to talk now. It's been 5 minutes.
Right. You're interrupting this gentleman. You're interrupting this man, Ted. I wish you would.
Such a rude...
I made a statement. Ass bag?
Well, how about this?
What is that? What's an ass bag?
You've got a...
That's something that you have since the colostomy? I don't...
Okay, let's not be smart. Let the gentleman finish.
There's only one gentleman, and it's me. So you've got a...
Yes, sir.
...that I agree is good just because Phil said it's good, not because you said it's good. And you have a product on your menu that a woman found objectionable. So what you do is attack her. You attack the woman, and she probably was being truthful with you. So here's a freebie. Here's free consulting. Take seafood off your menu. Just take
free consulting.
And use your...
Is this guy for real? This guy's... You're sitting in Baton Rouge. And you're out of work, and you're telling me?
He's retired. The man's retired.
Oh, give me a...
He doesn't listen.
Who are you that I listen? I'm not gonna... Who are you, sir? I mean, with all due respect, who are you to listen to? You're some guy that called a talk show. I'm here, and I'm to our clams. I dare you to eat one of our clams. You'll love it. You'll make love to it.
Listen, you know what? Next time I'm out there, I'll come by and have clams. And I'll
on me. On me.
And I'll look
at
me. And I'll tell you the truth. If you play
and you're going to love it. And the meal's on me.
All right, we'll be right back. Phil Henry Show. 877-876-7445.
This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Table two.
Ted's of Beverly Hills.
Table two.
Steakhouse, come on down.
Go on down to Ted's of Beverly Hills. The NBA season is in full swing, and guess what? Looks like the Lakers are going to deal off that Gasol guy, the center. Who are they going to get? Are they going to beat the Clippers out? You know.
We want to put our meat in your mouth.
I got too much going on.
Phil Henry here with Ted Bell. You're pretty busy there tonight, Ted?
Well, we do have a good crowd, so I'm between doing your show, which I appreciate doing, Phil, and I am a sponsor of your program, but I'm between that and I'm also trying to hustle my people up. We're doing the best way. We're doing the best we can with what we have. What can I tell you? And
all right, let's take a phone call here. We got Lloyd listening to us in Alhambra tonight. Lloyd, you're on the Phil Henry Show with Ted Bell. Go ahead.
I don't know. Can you hear me? I can hear you very well, sir. Yes. All right. Are you telling me that you are serving me a rancid clam? I didn't understand the gentleman.
Are you serving rancid clams? Is that your policy?
Is it your policy to serve, well, as you described it, rancid clam? No, sir, it is not. And yet you argued with that woman who said that you had given her a rancid clam. No, she had ordered, sir, a dozen clams. These are boiled. These are clams that are stewed in our butter broth. It is a delicious dish. And, I like clams, and I've had them all my life. I come from the East Coast, but I don't understand you telling this woman or any consumer, welcome to my restaurant, the clams are rancid. Because we are a steakhouse, and a damn good steakhouse, I think you should expect that the seafood at times could be rancid. And here's why that's the stupidest thing that I've ever heard, sir. Excuse me, sir. You know, I didn't interrupt you, sir. Well, you know, I have to interrupt you because that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. I did not interrupt you, sir. Now, the steak we make, I put against any steak in America. And as you know, America has the greatest steaks in the world. So when I tell you that we put our steak against any steak in America, basically what I'm telling you is we make the greatest steak on Earth. On Earth, on the planet Earth. When you come along and start going on and on and on and on about a rancid clam, that's like that. You know what that's like saying? That's like saying, how come your Volkswagen didn't win the Indy 500? Are you serious? No. And no, that's exactly what it means. And I have the right. And you don't have any right to come into my place, order a clam, and then tell me it better taste like it came out of Aliotto's you-know-what.
All right, the gentleman, I think he hung up anyway. 877-876-PHIL. So are you saying, Ted, that serving bad clams is a part of the... You're not saying that's part of the dining experience.
No, I'm not. No, only a moron would say that. I'm saying, you come to my place to order steak. Get serious.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's go over to... we've got Greg here. Greg, you're on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead, sir.
First, I'd like to thank him for sponsoring this show. This is a great show. I'm a truck driver. I listen to it every night. But the point I'm going to make, as a customer, You need to earn my business every time I walk into your restaurant. And if I've been in there six times and everything was fabulous, now, serves me something I don't like, I'm going to let you know about it. And
in a recession? In a recession, you're saying to me, as I struggle to stay afloat, as I struggle to keep my employees employed, you think what you'd like to do is go ahead and stick it in deeper and twist it. Is that what? Because that's what I think is happening to Disney. In the middle of a recession, they go out and spend $250 million, which I think is a pretty spare amount of money to make a movie. And do they get any loyalty? They get none.
I don't care if they spend $1 trillion on that movie. I would not invest a nickel of my money to support Disney, because out of that $250 million, they probably put at least $1 billion into the gay rights movement. Do you support the gay rights movement?
Yes, as you do.
No, I don't.
I'm joking. No, I know you're. You know what they say about guys that don't, you know, that are against gays? They're probably gay themselves. Have you thought of that?
That's it.
Well, have you thought of that? No, I'm just. Have you thought of that?
I'm just telling
you. What has that got to do with anything, Ted?
Well, this guy's bringing a whole other topic into it. And I'm telling you, it's psychologists will tell you, guys that have a problem with gays, they have a fear that maybe they go that way. That's psychology. That's not me.
All right.
So we're not really, you know, that we're off topic, but I appreciate your call, sir. I don't really want to talk about gay rights, though. 877-876-PHIL. Let's go over to Ross. Ross, you're on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, Phil. I was just calling. Yeah. I actually just came out of the John Carter from Mars movie, and I thought it was a great movie. But I've been a fan of Edgar Rice Burroughs for a long, long time.
Well, there you go. You're proving my point.
But what I wanted to say is that just because it's a recession or just because it's Disney, nobody owes Disney anything. They don't have to go there and see the movie if they don't want to. And frankly, I think Disney didn't do a very good job of marketing this movie. I think it's a much, much better movie than what you saw by watching the few commercials and things that they put out for it.
You know what? You know, that's a good point, because the only thing I saw of it were the billboards. I saw the billboards appear, I'd say, about 3 weeks ago. And all it was John Carter and what looked like two gorillas until you got closer to the billboard and you realized it was some sort of creature from another dimension, you know. And I'm going, what the hell is that? John Carter? Is that the name of a disc jockey? Is that, are they?
Oh, Phil, what, you know, yeah. I listen to you guys. Let me ask you something.
Well, hold on, Ted. This gentleman read the books by Edgar Rice Burroughs. This is based on novels by Edgar Rice Burroughs, correct, Ross?
Yes, that's right.
And you read them and liked them.
I read them probably, I'm 40, and I was probably 10 or 12 when I read them. I was young enough that I didn't even know who the author was, and for years I've actually been looking for those books because I want to give them to my son as he gets a little older. So it's not like this is a book that, you know, just saying John Carter from Mars, everyone's going to go, oh, you know, I know what that is. I want to go see that movie.
Can I jump in here, Bill?
Go ahead.
Well, this gentleman is saying that he read the Edgar Rice Burroughs books. As far as I know, the only thing that Edgar Rice Burroughs ever wrote that was worth anything was Tarzan. Now this gentleman tells me about, okay, Disney took a classic novelist, Edgar Rice Burroughs, that every child has read when it comes to Tarzan, and they put it on the screen. And this is something that Disney has done, I think, and they are should be commended, that they have made us aware of these great novelists, from Edgar Allan Poe to Jules Verne, now Edgar Rice Burroughs. And this gentleman went out and saw the movie, and he even said he'd take his child. But what did the rest of America do? Because they didn't get exactly what they wanted from Disney, which was probably another a magic lantern movie with a bunch of songs. Oh, boy. You know, and it makes me sick to my stomach. And because they didn't get that, they don't go to the movie and essentially lift their leg to a company that has been family-friendly for a long time.
Well, I mean, you know, this man liked it, and you say you would take your kids to see it, sir, but Ross made a really good point, and it's about marketing. Disney did not do marketing properly. I saw billboards here in Los Angeles, and that's it. The commercials I saw, starting maybe a couple of weeks ago, I saw the commercials.
Well, hold on for a minute. You're doing something here that I didn't want to do. You're making Disney the bad guy. The point of this hour that I wanted it to be is how the consumer has stuck it to Disney one more time.
And stuck it to Disney.
It was a $250 million movie. And the average consumer, that I don't know what they, if they didn't have Disney, their kids would be in much, much worse shape than they are now. Do you know the children that Disney has saved? And I mean this sincerely, Phil. Do you know that Disney has had to be a parent as well as a filmmaker? Do you know that Disney has had to pick some children up out of the sewer and clean them up and set them on the right path in life because their parents are a disgrace? Disney's done that. Disney's done that for America. And what did Disney get for their trouble this weekend? All of those parents whose children were picked up out of a sewer, those parents lifted their legs to the company that cleaned their kids up and pulled them out of a storm drain. And so I think that they are owed a little bit more than that.
877-876-PHIL here on the Phil Henry Show. Let me go over to Adam. Adam, you're on the Phil Henry Show with Ted Bell. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Ted Bell. I'm just curious. I'm also an executive chef. Well, I am an executive chef in the same industry you are. And just along the lines of your restaurant and everything, you mind what type of beef do you use, you know, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, what's that got to do with what we're talking about?
Well, I'm wondering.
But I don't like these questions.
No, I'll give you the premise of where I'm going with this. There's a lot
of large
and small ranchers out there right now that are struggling to make ends meet and struggling through this recession. And I'm wondering how much you buy from each one of the ranches across this great nation.
Let me just tell you this. From ranchers. Nobody buys from ranchers. People, we buy from wholesale. Okay? And I'm not here to justify my business. Is this guy going to listen to me, Phil, or is he going to dominate the conversation?
Okay, what is the point here, gentlemen? What is the point here? What are we talking about?
This guy's a chef, and he's asking me about my restaurant. I'm telling him and anybody else that's interested that I do a quality product. Disney does a quality product. If this guy here, Andrew, whatever his name is, Adam, does a good product, then I expect people will be loyal to it.
But you don't.
What rancher do I buy from? Are you serious?
Yeah, sure.
I don't think you are a chef. I don't think you are a chef.
Well, I buy directly from a co-op that's based out of Oregon, and they have seven ranchers, and I actually have met all seven of them personally. I speak to them.
And what's that got to do with Disney? What's that got to do with Disney getting screwed?
Well, you say that, you know, they put all this money into this money, and as consumers,
exactly,
they built a brand, and they deserve loyalty to it. Well, these ranchers have built a brand, and they deserve loyalty. So how much loyalty are you spreading?
What is this guy talking about?
Okay, you guys are talking across purposes. I guess he doesn't use a ranchers, Adam, so it's
okay,
pumping a dry well there. 877, to coin a phrase, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. The loyalty that the audience is not showing to Disney. Disney put $250 million into the John Carter movie series, $250 million into that film. They only made $5 million the opening weekend. Ted Bell is with us saying basically the consumer didn't have the common decency to support a company that had supported them for many years. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. Listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. Ted Bell from Ted's Beverly Hills is on the line with us as we continue discussing product loyalty, where, you know, the recession that we are just coming out of was brutal. And, you know, as I say, we're just coming out of it. I guess we can argue, are we or are we not? But the point is, it was brutal. And, Ted, you think that a lot of businesses suffered and a lot of businesses got no loyalty from customers during the downtime, and you're even seeing this with Disney. Now, I wanted to ask you...
Yeah, I'm seeing it with Disney with the $250. Maybe people don't know how much $250 million is. That's a lot of money. Disney, and in my restaurant, where I do the greatest steak you're ever going to eat in your life, and the woman comes in, she's married to... Bill Jeffcoat, who has been a business partner of mine off and on. We've produced a couple of movies together, and he's on good days, he's a good guy. But he comes in with this, you know, girlfriend. And I don't know whether he put her up to it or whether she did it on purpose. They come into a place that says Ted's of Beverly Hills Steakhouse, and the first thing she orders are the clams and the butter broth. And I remember shaking my head. I was back in the kitchen because Jerry came back and a few of the servers and Paul was there, our chef. And I said, "What's the story?" They said, she did it. She's ordered the clams." And I shook my head and I said, "You know what? I've known that guy Jeffcoat, and I know that he is a low. He's the dregs of society."
This guy's a former business partner?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've seen, and believe me, I've been around some real scum. This guy's the dregs. And he comes in with this woman, and the first thing she does is she throws the curveball high and tight. "Let me have the clams." Well, what am I supposed to do?
You serve her clams that aren't rancid.
You know what, Phil? I'm the sponsor of your show, and...
All right, well, okay, but that's what she claimed.
Yeah, that's what she claimed. And I said to her, you know, even if they were rancid, which I don't believe they are, but let's say they were, you'd have to prove to me that they are. And she said, "How am I supposed to do that?" I said, "Quite frankly, whatever effect they have on you physically. And you're not going to do that, because the only thing that you can prove is that you threw up or you had diarrhea, and I don't want to see either." And that's when she admitted to me she couldn't prove it. So why did she come into my restaurant and order the clams and say they're rancid and cause this scene there in front of at least two other tables? Why? Because Jeffcoat, in my opinion, is trying to run my business down.
Well, I don't know what I don't know these people.
Well, I do, believe me.
I don't know the people involved, and I don't really think that the way to prove whether you have bad clams is the way that you put it together necessarily. Let's go to Luis here on the Phil Henry Show. Luis, go ahead. You're on with Ted Bell.
Hey, guys. What an interesting conversation you guys have. No, I just think, you know, I do product development for one of the biggest medical device companies in the world, actually. And, you know,
What did you say, sir? One of the biggest what?
Medical device companies in the world.
Yes, sir.
Okay, and so when we put out a product, it's got to be the very best, right? So I believe that he says he's got the very best steak, right? So
yes,
I think, right? And you know what? When you have a customer like that, the only thing you can do is you got to go back and say, "Look, I'm sorry about that," and make it a positive experience for that person, because the worst thing you can have in business is an upset customer, and they'll give you negative press, right? So whether you make a lousy movie in Disney or you have rancid clams, it doesn't matter, right? You just have to...
I don't agree. No, I don't agree, because I would say this. At some point, you have to draw a line in the sand. And if someone comes in and says, "Well, guess what? Your clams are rancid." It's like that lady that, I don't know if you heard the story, Smith and Walensky. You know this restaurant? They got them all over the country. Some woman claimed that there was a condom in her clam chowder, and guess what Smith and Lewinsky said? They said, "Prove it, because we think you planted it." And they were right. She did plant it. She dropped her lawsuit, and they countersued her. Now,
well, what are you saying?
I'm saying that, you know, it's very like, I'm saying, yes, it is likely our clams were rancid, but I think it's likely that they came in expecting the clams to be rancid, ordered them, so they could start talking garbage about me.
Ted, you got to take those clams off the menu then. I mean, you are the best steakhouse. You stick to your steak. That's what you got to do. The minute
you start
diversifying into other products, you're going to lose that, you know, that focus, and other people are going to just see you as with your steak, with your clams. It doesn't matter. You're a steak guy. Stick to what you do best.
No, I know. But you got to have seafood for these people to come in. They expect it. You know, in other words,
Then you
got to
be ready. Then you got to be ready, right? Like if
I was ready. I was ready. I had.
You were just saying
you
that.
You weren't.
Go ahead.
You weren't ready. You had rancid clams on the menu.
Right.
I said it was likely they were rancid. But why? Well, I don't think you guys quite understand the restaurant business.
Well, you know what? I've been to plenty of restaurants, and you know the worst thing is as a consumer, right? If the guy comes back and says, "Look, I'm sorry about that," and do your best, especially in this recession, when you talk about the recession, you got to stay in business. And the way you stay in business,
I would
is you get happy customers.
Yes, absolutely. And I would have done it with any other customer except for this guy's girlfriend, because I knew who he was and I knew what she was making a scene. And I said, "Let me tell you something, sister." And I shouldn't have talked to her like that because the people heard me. But I
exactly.
said, "Well."
Well, Ted, you know, you talk to people sometimes like you're a gangster. And even if you know this guy, and even if you know her, and you know that they're in there to cause trouble, you got to keep it under wraps, man. You know.
Oh, is that right, man? Okay, man.
Oh, look, Ted, you know, I'm trying to help you here.
All right, but what gives them the right to come? Why do they have the right to come in and this, excuse my language, this broad that Jeffcoat's dating stands up and says, oh, your clams taste like you-know-what. She used the word, A-S-S.
Hey.
Well.
Hey, Ted, you know what you can do? Ted, listen, the next time something like that happens, you go to the two tables that hurt you and say, you know what, I'm sorry about that scene. Let me give you a taste of my clams.
Okay.
Right?
Let me give you a taste of my what?
Let me give you
okay,
a
thank you very yeah, no, thank you very much. Appreciate it, sir. 877-876-PHIL. Ted Bell with us.
Look, Phil, next time don't have me talking to some product guy. I own the restaurant, okay?
That gentleman's a caller. 877-876-7445. The world famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
Ted's of Beverly Hills Steakhouse, come on down.
Come on down to Ted's of Beverly Hills. You know, we got the Prime Rib Room, which is our sports bar, lots of basketball. But I want to, in this next hour with Ted Bell, talk about Peyton Manning in the NFL.
Here at Ted's,
in Beverly Hills.
Do you want to put our meat in your mouth?
And by the way, Phil, I wanted to mention and thank you, the Ted's of Beverly Hills hoodies.
Oh, the Ted's of Beverly Hills hoodies are for sale in our souvenir shop. If you go to our shop, they're on our website, philhenryshow.com. We are pushing those Ted's of Beverly Hills. I'll tell you, they're a smash hit.
Well, I knew they would be, and I think everybody wants a Ted's of Beverly Hills hoodie. And, you know, even with the summer months coming up, remember that a lot of you are going to be spending your evenings out on the beach barbecuing or, you know, spending the evening. It gets cool at night. You need to have your Ted's of Beverly Hills hoodie at all times, even for those cool summer evenings. And, of course, the springtime, but we're still not out of winter yet. You know?
No, we are not. No, we've still got a few more weeks of winter left and then the spring. But here in California and elsewhere across the country, there's still lots of cold weather ahead.
So get that Ted's of Beverly Hills hoodie. And it's got our logo right. What do you call a logo? Or a,
it's a logo.
Logo right on the front. And our slogan on the back. We want to put our meat in your mouth. And you can get it at the Phil Henry Shop.
Absolutely. Ted Bell joining us here. And our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Let's talk about something that I know you brought to my attention, Ted. You wanted to really get into this. We sort of got into Disney sideways because of a news note that you saw. But the interesting story here is from North Carolina. You know what? Did I not print that off, Bud? Let me see. The story is from North Carolina, and it is about Peyton Manning, the now unemployed quarterback, but soon I'm sure he will be employed. You know,
but there's no way Peyton Manning stays out on the open market for very long. He's a great quarterback. He's a class act. He's a team leader. He's a guy that knows his business, and he's a Super Bowl winner, and he's an All-Pro. How does a Peyton Manning stay unemployed? I don't think so.
All right. Well, here's the story. A server at the Angus Barn in Raleigh, North Carolina, which is a steakhouse, I guess.
No, it's not a. Let's back up, Phil. I operate a steakhouse, but you got here with this place, this Angus Barn. I don't know, but I'm telling you right now, with a name like Angus Barn, it sounds like one of these family barbecue joints. Okay, so please don't ever do that and say that it's like my restaurant.
All right, okay. Well, when you say a family barbecue, what does that mean?
What does it mean? It means the servers are basically women. And I've got nothing against female servers, but you know that when you have female servers, you know that you're not in a high-end place. We have male servers. The only females that we have are in our cocktail lounge, the Prime Rib Room.
Okay. I mean, it seems to me I've been in some nice restaurants, and I've had...
Name one.
Morton Steakhouse.
And you're telling me they got female servers?
Morton Steakhouse has female servers. And then not all of them.
No. Let me tell you, if the place, and now you're going to get me in trouble with women, all I'm trying to say is if the place has females as servers, and they're wearing, you know what I'm talking about, they got the checkered little apron and the jeans, and they look like they're going to a rodeo, you know it's a family joint, okay?
No, I know what you mean about a family barbecue place. I get that. I didn't know how you knew this was one of them.
The Angus Barn, that's a tip-off. You're not going to call, what are you going to call a five-star joint the Angus Barn?
I don't know. The Blue Ridge Grill in Atlanta is one of the best restaurants I've ever been in, and that's...
And it's what? The Blue Ridge Grill, that sounds... I don't want to get an argument with you here, Phil, because I know this is my business. See, this is... I'm Ted Bell. And I say that, because I'm Ted Bell. All right?
And you own the restaurant.
I own the restaurant, but I'm Ted Bell. I'm Ted Bell. You aren't. I am. So when I talk about restaurants, and you talk about restaurants, you're Phil Hendry, I'm Ted Bell. What are you doing? You're talking about restaurants. What am I doing? I'm talking about restaurants. Now, the guy passing on the street hears you and hears me. He hears Ted Bell and Phil Hendry. He says, boy, that Phil Hendry must be about 100 yards of stupid arguing with Ted Bell about restaurants. That's the point that I was trying to make here, and you... for whatever reason, you wanted to give me an argument. I'm telling you, a place called the Angus Barn...
All right, Ted, you made your point.
No, a place called the Angus Barn is going to be a family barbecue dump. And I'm sorry to put it that way.
Well, you don't have to run the business down. I just wanted to know how you knew. Here's what... Can we get to the point here?
Please.
Peyton Manning was at the Angus Barn in Raleigh, North Carolina... A server that served Mr. Manning and his party, and I believe he was there with some other individuals. He was there with the quarterback coach from the University of Tennessee. He was there with the head football coach from Duke. These were people that were participating in the workout, so I'm trying to find, but he was there with a party of people, okay?
Yeah.
And so the tab came. It was a $739 tab. Mr. Manning, Peyton Manning, tipped $200 on the $739. It's a very, very generous tip.
It's extremely generous. Yeah, it's well over 20%.
Okay. But on top of that, there is an 18% gratuity added. So I don't know if, we can do the math, but Mr. Manning, Peyton Manning, basically tipped this server well over $300, I would think, for his service.
Well, he was happy with the service. Now, this server got fired. And the owner-operator of the Angus Barn, and that's why I also think it's probably some family joint, Van Uri, I think is the, it's actually a woman, got incensed about the server going public with the tip. She said it goes against every policy we have.
That's why the server got fired, because he basically showed everybody the tip that he got.
Exactly. And I find that in this day and age, the way businesses are being treated, unconscionable that they fired that server for letting the world know finally how well servers get tipped. See, we've been hearing, Phil, and you've been hearing, and we've all been hearing about how waiters and waitresses, goodness gracious, life is bad. Yes, they work hard. I'd be the first guy to tell you that they work hard. I know, because I see them every night at my restaurant. And I know that they are well worth the money. But are they, starving? No. Do they get stiff? We hear these stories. Well, finally, a waiter has come forward and is showing the world the truth. And what happened? He got fired.
Well, I mean, showing the world the truth. This owner...
Yeah, showing the world that finally a guy comes forward and says, here's how well we get tipped, and he gets canned. So that this owner is somehow favoring the servers and wants to perpetuate the myth that waiters and waitresses are just making it on their little 15% or 18% or whatever. Oh, boy, and life sure is tough. Yeah, sure. Take a look at this, huh? Over $300? $300 for bringing some plates to a table, and the guy's name happens to be Peyton Manning. That's what I'm talking about. And to me...
All right, well, I don't know what if any of what you said is true. I do know that...
Well, I'm telling you it's true.
that this guy had the courage to come forward to show how well they get tipped as waiters so that people will know not to feel sorry for waiters.
Exactly. Exactly. And what did he get for his trouble? He got fired. Here's a guy that courageously stepped forward and said, would you stop playing the violin for waiters and waitresses? Look at the kind of money I'm making. And guess what? You're fired. I would do it. I'd give the guy, I'd get a press release out and commend that employee.
Well, anyway, this is the restaurant. It's called the Angus Barn, it was the owner-operator firing this waiter for going public with this tip. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Ted Bell joining us as we talk this hour about, you believe that this waiter went public to show how well he gets tipped. Do you think that waiters and waitresses therefore have been, crying a river?
Oh, yeah. They've been crying me a river of tears. And people are lapping it up like kitten's milk. These waiters and waitresses cry a river, and people suck it up like it's mother's milk. And I think it's time that it came to a stop, and my congratulations, and I'm absolutely proud and enamored of this waiter.
All right, 877-876-PHIL is the number here. The Phil Henry Show with Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills here in our regularly scheduled sponsored segment. We've been talking about Disney and product loyalty, and now we've got the issue of waiters and waitresses. How well do they get tipped? Well, here's a guy that got over $300 on a $700 tab or a $600 tab in tip money. 877-876-7445, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Yeah, I'm Ted Bell.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Ted Bell with us, talking about the tip that was left by Peyton Manning that was publicized by the waiter, and he was fired. And the manager of that restaurant, Ted, said, and she's the owner-operator.
Well, good for her. I'm an owner-operator, too.
All right. Well, I'm just saying to you that what she said was that was against every policy.
I'm sure that it is against every policy when you're trying to make it seem like waiters are starving to death.
Well, let me ask you this. If you are showing someone a tip, if you're showing somebody the actual receipt that one gets and one signs when one is in a restaurant, aren't you divulging some information that may be confidential? I'm not sure if there's credit card information.
No, there's no credit card information there. What that was divulging in her mind, it was divulging information that she wanted to keep quiet, which is that waiters get paid really well. What she wanted to keep it quiet for is so that people will keep tipping high, thinking that maybe these people are starving to death, and then she won't be bothered by them having to give them raises. You see what I'm saying? Do you see how insidious that is? She's upset that what this very courageous server did was show how much money he actually makes, and now she's going to, you know, get angry because the other servers are going to want a raise.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
That's because you don't own a restaurant, okay?
No, that doesn't make any sense that she was upset.
I explained it once, Phil.
She's upset that this guy went public showing that they actually make a lot of money when in point of fact, they don't make a lot of money. And if they make a lot of money, then she won't have to give them raises.
She'll have to give raises to the one. Believe me, I can't explain it. It's too difficult. I'm a restaurant operator. I know what I'm talking about. And what that waiter did was took guts. Thank you, sir. Now everyone knows that waiters are not starving to death.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. You also made a comment about the male servers as opposed to female servers that we're going to get into in just a moment. Here is Mark. Go ahead, Mark. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
Fine.
So, listening to this guy talking, a couple of things that strike me as odd about what you said. First off, man, how long have you been an owner-operator of a restaurant?
I can't understand you, sir. Is that your cell phone or is it somebody else's?
Can you? Are you on a? Are you on a speaker, sir? Are you on a speaker or are you on a?
Say that again. How long have I? How long have I been an owner? How long have I been an owner operator? I've owned this restaurant since the early '80s, almost 30 years.
Okay. I don't know. I've been a restaurant manager for 15 years.
A manager? You're not an owner.
You gave a server a raise because server.
You're not a manager. You're not an owner. You're a manager. Okay.
Yeah, well, I've been a general manager for 15 years. Servers don't get raises, first off. Their raise is based off their tip. Secondly,
they make
servers
exactly.
And
they
the
make a lot of tips.
They are.
Sir, I got to tell you, this is what your phone sounds like. If you're telling me that you've been a manager and a general manager, don't you think you'd buy a better phone? I think you would.
I want the best on the market.
What is it?
HTC Evo.
Garbage.
Oh, come on.
It's garbage. Now, listen. I've been an owner, not a general manager. I don't, you know, I don't stand over the buffet to see how many plates they're taking. I'm the owner of the restaurant for 30 years.
Yeah, which means
and
you
I know they make
on the floor in your restaurant.
I'm on the floor every night. You know, I'm on the floor every night, okay? And I know that they make a bundle. But they're always crying the blues. Now comes a guy who says, take a look at what Peyton Manning paid me, and they fire him? I find that to be, you know.
Okay, well, first off, anybody who's ever waited on an athlete knows that most of them don't tip like that. Good thing Peyton can thank you. You know, it's great that he took care of a server like that. But you're out there giving people an invitation that these people are taking home $500 a night, and you're really hurting people in the industry when you do that. You know,
well, wait a minute.
Everybody goes into
don't you think
thinking they're carrying around bundles of cash when anybody who knows a true server knows they don't make that much money. They are scrounging to work hard, and these people work hard for their money.
Well, I know that, but what you're doing now is you're giving athletes a bad name, and you're calling them all cheap. And I think that that is going to be bad because they're not going to want to eat in your restaurant. You calling them cheap?
I didn't call
them
cheap. I said most of them don't tip like Peyton Manning did.
Right. Well, I mean, look, if their servers are not making money and they're not tipping, then I'm going to assume they're being cheap. And I'm saying that, you know, there's something missing. And it could very well be the difference is that you're a general manager and I'm an owner, so I know more.
7-6, Phil. Moving on to this other point that you wanted to get to, Ted.
What about the one that we're talking about?
Well, the one that we're talking about here, about the tipping, is pretty much dried up. I don't think people are all that interested in it.
What is that supposed to mean? I don't understand.
People are not interested in it.
Well, I want to talk more about it, so I don't know what you got to do, but you better get some people. I want to talk more about it, okay?
Ted, I want to move on to the point that you made.
Well, you want to move on. I don't want to move on. I want you to get some people to call in and talk to me about tipping. Now, I don't know how you do it. That's your job. That is what you do. I'm a restaurant owner. But I'm not done making the point that these people are they're making out like bandits. And this guy got flush with over $300, and he went public with it, and guess what? The restaurant fires him. There's something wrong there, okay? I'm getting held up by my waiters saying that I'm a cheap creep. One of them came out and said that to one of my customers the other day, that this Ted Bell's a cheap creep. I had to fire her, and the rest of them are saying basically the same thing behind my back. And meanwhile, look at this. So, and we get a lot of big names coming into our restaurant.
Can we talk, though, a little bit about the females and the males?
No, I said I want to talk about tips. Now get the calls. Let's go.
Good, good. Mr. Holland's on the line.
877-876 Phil. We got David on the line here. Put him up on line 3. Yeah, David.
Start churning some good. Ted, hey, how you doing, David? Good. Get some phone calls.
What do you mean, get some phone calls, man? Nobody wants to talk about tips anymore.
I said, see, he's giving me an argument again. Don't give him an argument. Just do it. Here, I'll do it. Let me do it. Hey, I'm Ted Bell. This is I bought this hour. I've sponsored this hour. So I want you you listening, call in and tell me what you think about these waiters lying about not making enough money when that one waiter showed that he got $300. Call in. What's the number?
877.
877. Go ahead.
877-876.
877-876. That's nine numbers.
Oh, 877-876-7445.
7445. 866. I don't know what the number is. Get the number right, will you, Phil?
I'm doing it. 877-876-Phil. And then we're going to discuss, I hope and pray, female waiters as opposed to male waiters. You say that the high-end restaurants will have male waiters.
Well, yeah, and even if we have females, we have to make them wear their hair up. We put them in pants. We put them in a dress shirt. We put them in patent leather shoes. You have to make your female servers, even in a high-end restaurant, look male, because we can't have women, and I'm saying this, women work hard, Phil, but there's just some realities that die hard. You can't have women in a high-end restaurant as waiters unless you make them look more masculine.
All right, 877-876-7445, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Are they calling in?
Hold on, will you? God.
Don't talk to him like that. The other day...
Phil Hendry Show.
Ted's of Beverly Hills Steakhouse, come on down.
Going down to Ted's of Beverly Hills. Listen, what I do is I own a restaurant and we make great steak. I don't know about all these political issues. I know that I pay my waiters well. I know they make money. And I know that we've got great servers.
Well, can I just ask you about the male versus female thing? You say that men generally are waiters in high-end restaurants, women are not.
That is correct. If you have females working in a high-end restaurant, and hold on, would you tell them to shut up out there, please?
I didn't want to say.
What? But tell them to shut up, because I can hear them all the way in here. We've got diners. On Friday nights, Phil, what I do tell my diners is that I'm going to be on your program, and generally I'm working in my office, but tonight I'm in the kitchen. So on Friday nights, I tell a lot of the diners that are outside the kitchen, if they wouldn't mind to just have some respect and not be running their mouth. I try to say it as best as I can, but not run their mouths. Well, it's a funny thing about diners. You know, they come into your restaurant, they're eating the best steak that they've ever put in their mouth, on a plate, anything. And you can hear it, see? Here?
I thought that was the kitchen. Is that not the kitchen help?
No, that's some loud guy at a table. What? He said what? He told me to tell that guy to shut up.
Ted, this is what we're talking about. That's one of your customers.
I understand it's one of my customers. But I'm Ted Bell. I built this restaurant up from nothing. Nothing. And now I got waiters and waitresses screaming and crying and slobbering me a river because they don't think they're making enough money. And meanwhile, some guy made off like a highwayman with Peyton Manning as his benefactor. No thank you.
All right, 877-876-PHIL is the number on the Phil Hendry Show. Let's get to some phone calls here. On the line, we have Josh in Houston, who is a waiter. Go ahead, Josh. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Well, I think it's unfair, Phil. You got all these waiters.
Josh, you there? All right, he's gone. Let's go to Joy. Go ahead, Joy. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yes, I just want to say that this Ted Bell is an idiot. I heard him one night on this very station saying and he does not let the waiters have their tips, that he keeps it because he's the manager and he's the one that deserves it. So I don't see why he's up there talking all this trash about the people.
I don't know. I don't know where you got that. I don't know where you fantasized that, but I never said that.
Well, yes, you did. Sure. You said that.
You sure did.
You said you're the one that
I deserve the tips, yes, sometimes. If I observe my staff on any given night and they look like they're walking around like a casting call for Walking Dead, then I say to them, you know what? You don't deserve these tips. Gimme. Gimme, 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 gimme. And that's what we,
that's
on
not
those
what
nights.
You said that night.
I beg pardon?
That's not what you said that night. You said you take the tips.
Not all the time. When I see them, when I see my wait staff as if they're ghouls lurching about in Walking Dead, then I say to them, you don't deserve this money. This money isn't going to do you any more good than it would do a ghoul.
Well, that's the customer's choice if they want to give them the money. You don't have it's not fair for you to say that when the customers were giving them the tip, and they must have thought that they did good.
Well, that's true, but you know as well as I do that the customer feels pressure into leaving a tip, even if the waiter was spilling food on them or dropping it on a table that had no people sitting at it. In other words, if the waiter was acting as if he'd just come out of a coma, they're still going to give him a tip. And I have to jump in the middle of that and say, now, wait, just hold the phone here. Let's be fair. I know that you, for instance, Joy, you're going to tip even if your waiter took a bowl of soup and poured it over the top of your head, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you?
No, I would not. No, I would not.
Oh, God, that's a lie.
Why would anybody tip on that situation?
Because the average customer today feels pressure into giving tips. Peyton Manning felt such fear and panic that he didn't want to even, he didn't want to be in the wrong at all. He just laid $200 on the guy and probably said a prayer as he was walking out. See what I mean?
Well, that's your opinion.
Ma'am, why do you think Peyton Manning tipped $200? Because he's flush and because he wants to be a big shot? No, because he was shaking with fear. His mouth was dry from fear.
Fear of what?
The pressure these food servers put on you.
Peyton Manning, 6'5", well over 200 pounds, solid muscle, big dude. And he's all scared to death that if he doesn't tip this guy, what's going to happen?
Have you ever heard of a parking lot? And you know what nighttime is, right?
Look, Ted.
You know what nighttime is, right?
Yeah.
Is it dark?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, what are you talking about, man? You're going to get jumped in a parking lot?
Don't ask me. You ask me a question, I'm giving you an answer. Ask me a question, I tell you no lie. Remember what the little kids would say? There.
Is that what your servers do to you when you leave if you don't give them a tip?
You know, I recognize this voice. This is Hal Holfield. He runs the sushi bar down the street. Hal, why are you calling up and doing a fake accent? Because I recognize who you are. And you've been trying to run my business out off of the street for years. You're never going to do it.
Wait a minute. This is a lady named Joy, correct, Joy? Where are you calling from, ma'am?
Oh, no, it isn't.
Where are you calling from, Joy?
That's all right where I'm calling from, but I'm not a man.
All right.
Well, okay. You sound exactly... Hal did voices on Supercar, so I know who it is.
All right. I guess we're at a crossroads, Joy. I appreciate your comments and your call, and we're going to move on, although I think you're, you know, a little batty.
Oh, you call it a lady batty?
No, I'm calling you batty for saying that. That's about as bizarre a thing.
I know Hal Holfield, who's got this sushi bar. He's got Beverly Sushi down the street. He calls me up in the middle of the day sometimes. And hey, have you got? He does the voice. You know the voice that Hal does?
Hey, you got the egg steak?
That's good. That was Luis. He does the voice. And that was him. And I will tell you again, Phil. Peyton Manning left that tip because he knew something. He knew something that perhaps you and I don't know. He knew something that perhaps other customers don't know. But he knew something, and he was either going to leave a tip or he was going to kiss his sweet rear end goodbye.
You have no way of proving that comment.
Oh, okay. Well, whatever you say, Dashiell Hammett.
877-876-PHIL. Let's go on to another phone call. I don't know. Here is Kevin on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead, Kevin.
Hello. I was the waiter for 12 years. 12 years. And I would never work for Ted. Is that his name? I worked for guys like him. I mean, the guy's paranoid. He's right about one thing. About I worked in one place for 6 years. My last 6 years.
What are you doing now? You've got a lot of personality. Are you working the jungle ride at Disneyland? I mean, really, you've got a lot of personality. You've got a lot of
But you know, our restaurant costs about $100 for a couple to have dinner there. Nice place. But you know, as far as the
that's a nice place, huh?
The female waitresses. They don't dress him down.
Okay, here's the thing. Here's the thing, Kevin. We don't need your phone call because you kind of suck. Let's move on here. 877-876-PHIL. We have Ryan on the line. Ryan, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Hello, sir. I've been a waiter many a year. And now I've been an owner of a restaurant.
For many a year. Okay.
Just give me a second, will you? Cool? Just give me a second.
Don't worry about it. Just you know, you've had a couple of drinks, I can tell. So just move on. Just move past it. Don't comment on everything.
Just give me a second.
God,
Pardon me?
So go ahead. What is your comment, Ryan?
Yeah, you see, this guy, because he's got a couple of belts, he's going to stop and blah, blah.
My comment is this. Can I speak? Is that cool?
This is what I mean. Every time you say something, a drunk is always going to stop and make an issue out of it.
Ted, shut up and let the man finish?
Yeah,
go ahead, Ryan.
Indeed. Fantastic.
See what I mean? Everything's a big dramatic thing. Just say what you got to say, Ryan, okay?
I got to say for anything.
All right, you just got bounced, man, for using the S word. He is a drunk. 877-8, we got to have to take a break here.
See what I mean? You know, you better get somebody better at screening these phone calls.
No, the guy was perfectly fine. You pissed him off is what happened. 877-876-PHIL. And, you know, I don't know what else to tell you. I think that I think Ted Bell's got a bizarre way of running business. Let's wrap up with this commentary on female waiters and then call it a night, or at least get into our news and information hour. More of your phone calls coming up, though. 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
This has been an awful lot of very upsetting conversation. You want great steak? Come to Ted's. If you want clams, you can still come to Ted's. But what do you want me to do? You want me to give you clams or you want steak? Why would you come to my place and eat clams? That's what I don't get.
Well, then why serve clams? That's what the guy said.
I heard what the guy said. Every steakhouse has a seafood offering. We have the clams in the butter broth. God, why can't you get it?
Then why don't you buy clams that aren't rancid? First of all, I'm a big clam and oyster fan.
You are?
Yeah, very much. Love them.
You eat the oysters, huh?
You better believe I eat oysters. I eat them lightly steamed. I love them. Love them. And I eat them right out of the freaking ocean, man. We used to go down to the real oyster bars, not this lightweight stuff you got on the West Coast. Go down to the Gulf, and you got the shuckers there.
Yeah. I've heard the whole story.
Well, great, okay. Maybe you ought to try something like that. I'd come in. And I'd eat a couple of buckets by myself. And I eat clams. And I know from bad seafood. And let me tell you, there's nothing worse in this world than a restaurant that doesn't know how to prepare, doesn't know how to refrigerate and keep seafood before they serve it. It tastes like garbage. And more to the point, you can get sick from it.
All right, I heard your speech. And again, you're missing one very vital point. Very vital point. Hi, it's called a steakhouse. Wow.
I get that. Then why do you have seafood on the menu?
I can't keep going through this with you. Okay?
Hold on. What?
I got Margaret online too, so I have to double chip in on a story.
Okay, we got Margaret Gray on the line. I guess she's out tonight, coming back from that fundraiser with her husband Frank. And Margaret, you've been listening to the conversation.
You know something, Phil? I have, and I was a hostess, and I worked for a steakhouse, and I wrote a song that was picked up by a young man by the name of Jimmy Webb. Maybe you know the name.
Jimmy Webb, of course.
Yeah.
Jimmy Webb, who wrote MacArthur's Park.
He wrote a lot of great songs. Well, I was at Jimmy's house one day when I was very young. It was before Frank and I got married. And I was humming a tune, and I had some lyrics. And you're going to recognize this. It goes something like this. Frank, watch the light, okay? One, two, one, two, three, and a one, two, one, two. Two, three. I am a hostess for the steakhouse. Huh?
Yeah, I recognize you, Mrs. Gray.
Yeah, I do.
Oh, get out of here. You told me you wrote that?
You want to just... Excuse me, I'm not done yet. Now I have to start all over again.
Go ahead.
One.
You wrote that, huh?
Yes, I did.
Well, first of all, it's not called Hostess for a Steakhouse.
I know that, Ted. One, two, one, two, three, one, two, three, three, four. I am a hostess for a steakhouse, and I seat a family of six. Oh, my God, here they come in from the parking lot. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And they're coming by the droves. It's a herd of poor white trash. And the steakhouse.
Well, I have to listen to this garbage.
Excuse me, I'm not done, Phil.
All right, but, you know, the lyrics are a little offensive, okay?
Oh, well, Art, I'm just so sorry that I'm offending your delicate sensibilities. You two guys got to be kidding me.
You're checking in very late on the topic, okay? We were discussing something that was very, very specific.
Oh, I'll bet you were. Phil, can I finish?
Margaret, you can finish, but I mean the herd of poor white trash.
Oh, well, okay, Phil. All I did was write a song that inspired Wichita Lineman by Jimmy Webb. But you go ahead and you tell me how I'm supposed to do it. Go ahead. Let me learn from you.
Margaret, I'm not saying it.
No, please, go ahead. I want to learn from you and learn all about how it's done, how you write songs.
You know what? You're a very arrogant woman, okay?
And why don't you get braces? Have you heard about that?
No one has ever referred to my overbite in public until now.
Well, I think some things need to change. I'd like to sing the song, Phil, but I can hear all kinds of noise in that kitchen that Ted's standing in.
This is where I work.
One, two, one, two, three, two, three. Three, four. I am a hostess at the steakhouse.
And its name is Sizzler.
Okay, you know what, Ted? The next time I see you, the devil will be having his way with you. In a dress.
Okay.
Wow.
The next time I see you, the devil will be having his way with you in a dress.
That mean the devil's in a dress?
I don't know who's in the dress. The devil is, or Ted is, or the devil put Ted, devil with the blue dress on. You've heard that song.
Yeah, now it all adds up.
Exactly. So it'll be be the devil in a blue dress. All right, we do have our news and information hour coming up. I didn't hear the rest of you. Is she still on the line?
Yeah, well, I put her on hold if you want.
Margaret, I guess Ted's line is still open. Did he hang up?
I'm still here. She's the one that hung up.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I'm still here. No, I whoever put me on hold. But you can hear Phil very clearly there, as I have said to you for many years, and I hope now it's finally sinking in. You heard very clearly in that small segment, that is a very disturbed woman. That's a very disturbed woman. And the fact that she referred to my overbite for the first time in public... And
well, it was a very cruel thing to say. You're absolutely right.
All I did was make a little bit of fun. I think she needs a doctor.
Well, she made a rather fantastic claim there.
What do you mean fantastic? She never... Jimmy Webb? I mean, first of all, Jimmy Webb wrote that song, Wichita Lineman. She was a punk kid, I thought.
She was in Hollywood already. She'd had a casting. She'd had a callback on the Big Valley, I think. She almost got the Big Valley job and then didn't get it.
What are you talking about? Almost.
So that would have put her at about 20 years of age, so she would have been around.
Oh, yeah, sure. So she's hanging around. What was she doing? Sleeping with Jimmy Webb, and she woke up one morning and went over to the piano and had coffee. And, oh, I'm telling you, she's a very, very, very disturbed woman. I'm Ted Bell.
We still got a few more minutes.
Oh, well.
Is she there?
Yeah, if you want to have her.
Margaret, we didn't mean to hang up on you.
I have never been so insulted in my life.
Ted, just be quiet, okay?
All I did was, I work at Sizzler.
I wrote a song that was meant for me and a young man that I knew who was coming into his own as a songwriter. Maybe you know the name, Jimmy Webb.
Yes, I got it already.
Oh, I see. Excuse me for boring you.
So, Margaret, you wrote this song, Steakhouse Hostess?
No, it was called I Am a Steakhouse.
Yeah, I'll bet you're a steakhouse.
Okay, that does it. You know, Ted, the devil is going to milk you.
Ew.
Yeah, that's. I don't want to hear any more from them. All right, coming up, our news and information hour here in the world. The devil's going to milk you.
Yeah, don't go there.
All right, coming up is our news and information hour here on the world famous Phil Henry Show. And, of course, tomorrow night we will be at the L.A. Animation Festival. This is at the Regent Showcase. The Regent Showcase on La Brea. It's going to be quite the event. And I will be there with Darren Norris and some of the puppeteers who were involved in the making of Team America. And we'll be on a panel answering questions before a screening at 11:30 of a great, funny, classically funny, and I think all-time classic of a movie, Team America. Now, I wonder how much they made Team America for.
Yeah, you should have asked him when you was there.
I would have find out what the budget was for Team America making that movie. Couldn't have been. I mean, you know, it was difficult to make, but it was a puppet movie. And they wound up making a lot of money in internationally, domestically, all that stuff. We'll be right back here with our News and Information Hour here on this Friday night on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
I am a lineman for the county.
God. Phil Henry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
Well, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show as we continue on this Saturday night on into the weekend. Now, a two-day weekend for the kid here. Not that I don't appreciate and not that I didn't enjoy my time doing our Saturday night show. Loved it. But having that extra day off was very, very necessary. Now, if you go to the homepage of our website, philhenryshow.com, you will find under the tab that says Fresh Phil, you will see under the Fresh Phil tab, KFI shows. And that's where you can go and you can find. Actually, I thought I was showing that on camera. Yes, can we? Thank you.
Camera 3.
Thank you, bud. Camera 3, there it is. Entries, KFI. And 1, 2. Well, so far we have 3. We've got 3 shows in there, but that's. That is the video and audio. You have a download of the MP3. You also can watch the video cast. So one of the things about those MP3 downloads is they now contain commercials. And I know a lot of you guys like to have those edited out. But we thought we'd get it up there as quickly as possible, just what we have. And there's more to come. So welcome to the program here on our final hour. It's our news and information hour. I just wanted to kick off with the mention of the Los Angeles Animation Festival, which is coming up now tonight because we're well into Saturday. And it is at the Regent Showcase Theater, 614 North La Brea Avenue in Los Angeles. This animation festival has been going on since Wednesday. Sean Lennon is one of the artistic directors. You know, the cat that does the voice for SpongeBob SquarePants, Bud.
Yeah, he was MC the other night.
Yeah, so they've got a lot of... In fact, my buddies from Napoleon Dynamite might be there. Tara Strong and maybe Phil Lamar and maybe some of the other guys. Nonetheless, at 11:30, I will be with Darren Norris, who is the voice of Spotswood for the film Team America. We're going to be together on a panel, a pre-screening Q&A, and that'll be followed by another Q&A with the Choitis brothers, and they were the puppeteers on Team America. They're going to chat a bit about the experience working on the film. And from what I gathered, just the brief conversations I had around there when the movie was being made, making a movie with puppets is nuts, you know?
But what are you talking about, puppet? All you got to do is put your hand on a sock.
These ain't sock puppets.
Are you crazy, Robert?
No, I know they wasn't sock puppets. But if they would have done it with sock puppet.
Well, yeah, sure, if they would have done it with sock puppets, guess what? It would have sucked, you know?
How do you know?
Well, or it maybe would have been better. Who knows? But sock puppets, you're limited because, sock puppets?
Well, the Muppet.
Muppets are not sock puppets. The Muppets are almost like half, well, they're half kind of hand puppet and half, you move the arms around and stuff on them. But nonetheless, they use marionettes, what are called the string puppets. And it was an insane experience from what I gather, and one that they didn't want to repeat. And so instead they put a Broadway musical on called Book of Mormon, and that's making even more money. These guys are stone geniuses. How do you fault these two cats, Matt Stone and Trey Parker? Everything they touch is gold. Everything, you know?
Well, they haven't done nothing they've ever sniffed out, I'll tell you that much.
I mean, I had a very brief conversation with him once, and I remember asking him, I said, so you guys have full creative control? He said, yep, that's the way it is. I said, we have to have that because we're ready to go back to Colorado tomorrow, was the way they put it. We'll go back to Boulder, Colorado tomorrow if anybody screws with us. That's our philosophy. And I said, boy, that's, you know, you're to be envied. And because they know what they're doing, you know, and they know what they're doing, and they know how to keep the powers that generally wreak more havoc and destruction than they do any good. They know how to keep those at bay, keep them as far away from them as they can get. When you let those people like studio people and general managers and all, the closer those people get to you, the worse things are going to get for you. The further away from you you can keep them, the better. Proof? You want proof? Matt Stone, Trey Parker, those guys do it their own way. And so they got this movie, Team America, they got this thing on Bri. Have you seen this thing?
I've seen a man called Book of Mormon. I don't know what it's about.
About being a Mormon and everything.
No, it ain't. It's a comedy. It's a satire. So they're hitting it out of the park. So we'll be there tomorrow night at 11:30, and then the screening of the film Team America at 11:50 at the LA Animation Festival. So if you're in the area, you want to join us, that should be a lot of fun. And I'm very, very grateful to have been asked, and thank you from the bottom. And also, talk about organized. These guys are beautiful, man. Because I didn't want to have a limo pick me up or anything. I like to drive myself because I'm not a big fan of being driven places. It's generally too slow, and I don't know where things are, and I don't want to have to rely on somebody. So I'm going to drive myself, and it's good to have all this information. Thanks very much, guys. All right, so a couple of things that I just wanted to read to you that we sort of were we dealt with in a very cursory way with the Ted Bell hours that we did. He was talking about the money that Disney had sunk into John Carter, and we were also talking about the Peyton Manning situation. This was a very interesting story, I thought, because the guy wound up getting fired because, you know, he did put out there either online or on a Facebook page or something, you know, Peyton Manning's signature and the specifics of the bill. The credit card number is covered up. It's a bunch of X's, but it's a contract you have with a restaurant that you don't expect to see on the internet. You know, everybody and their brother looking at it. This server was at this Angus barn in Raleigh, North Carolina, and was fired after going public about this generous tip from Peyton Manning. The credit card stub of the bill hit the internet not long after Manning dined at the restaurant on March the 2nd. The bill came to $739.58 and already included an 18% tip. So that $739 included an 18% tip. Manning added another $200, pushing the total tip past the $300 mark. Van Ury, owner and operator of the Angus Barn, was incensed when she learned about it and fired the server, according to the Triangle Business Journal. She said, quote, "This goes against every policy we have, and it's just horrible." Ury also said she intends to phone Manning to apologize. Manning, by the way, was in the area participating in workouts at Duke. The Blue Devils head football coach David Cutliff was Manning's quarterback coach at the University of Tennessee. The two were seen at the Blue Devils basketball game on March the 3rd against the University of North Carolina. I know he was at dinner with a group of people, and I know that some were athletes, some may have been coaches. I don't know how many. I don't think there was more than maybe five people at the table, but obviously Peyton Manning picked up the tab. So, got somebody fired, man. You know, celebrity these days, celebrity is it's so common, and obviously people are excited to be near celebrities, but now people have access to all manner of forms of communication to not only have been in close proximity to a celebrity, but to make a big deal out of it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, if you stood in a toilet stall and you went next to, I don't know, like a big coach or something.
Okay, if I stood in a toilet stall and I went next to a big coach.
What are you talking about, like, take a picture?
Yeah.
Boy, that'd take some guts. What kind of weird ass would do that?
Well, I mean, you know, what if you're standing next to, the guy from the New York Giants, Eli Coughlin, or I forget what his name is.
Eli Manning is the quarterback.
What's the coach?
Tom Coughlin, yeah. If I'm standing next to him in a bathroom and I whip out my iPhone and take a picture of him as we're standing there going to the, you know, taking a leak together, I don't think he'd be very happy about that.
Well, it's not like it's gay.
Yes, it is, okay? And not in the sense that, not in a homosexual sense, just gay as in, huh? You nuts?
What's that mean, huh? I don't think gay means huh. I think gay means almost gay.
Look, first of all, I got a real problem with everything being gay these days, okay? Because gay means gay. It means homosexual. And when you start talking about things in the negative sense as gay, I believe it starts to wear a little thin. Can we get off that kick? Can we grow up a little bit around here and be adult men? Do you mind?
Well, I mean,
do you mind? Can we?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think it was all that bad.
Well, I do. I do.
All right. Pretty gay, though.
What did I just get?
Get out of here. Just kidding.
All right, so we got that knocked out. Next up is Disney and their 100. And guess what? We got more numbers on this Disney movie. Not only did they spend $250 million to make the movie, already Wall Street's weighing in on just how much of a bath Disney's going to take on this movie. Oh, baby. Oh, yeah, they really blew it. How do you put I'm going to tell you something right now. When I found out the movie was $250 million in the making, that's when I really, my eyes bugged out, because the ad campaign for this thing, the pre-promotion for this thing, blew in every direction. So we'll talk about it next on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Well, welcome back here to the world famous Phil Henry Show. So as Wall Street weighs in on this movie, John Carter, and why do we talk about it? Because Ted Bell earlier in the evening made a big issue about how, well, you owe product. We owe loyalty to a company like Disney, which babysat our kids. And if it wasn't for Disney, a lot of our kids would be, sleeping in a sewer. I'm not sure I, agree with that.
Well, it makes kind of sense. Disney was, if it wasn't for a lot of the positive influence on Disney.
Yeah, but what kind of positive influence does Disney have?
Are you serious or something? They had Mickey Mouse, Chip and Dale, all of them. What are you kidding? Peter Pan was probably one of the most positive influences I ever had.
What was the positive influence about Peter Pan on you?
Just the fact that it was a kid that flew.
That's all?
No, not. What are you? Are you all sucking up to Phil?
No, man, I ain't sucking up to nobody, man. I'm trying to figure out what was the positive influence on you or the Pan.
What do you mean of the Pan? It's named Peter Pan.
I shortened up the Pan.
Let's call, you know, I he's right. You understand?
No.
I don't know what you mean when you say Pan.
If I call him Dickman, I call you Henry, why can't I call him Pan?
Because my name's Henry, his name's Dickman, your last name's Leonard, okay, fine. Now you say, hey, man, what about Pan? I don't know who the hell that is, okay?
It's Peter Pan.
I know now it's Peter Pan. But you're telling me, hey, so I was reading about the Pan. What do you mean, the Pan?
But, well, you do that, but my older brother was in Vietnam, right?
Okay.
And he called it the Nam.
Okay, your older brother can call it the Nam, and that's a whole other thing. But because your older brother called Vietnam the Nam doesn't mean you call Peter Pan the Pan. It doesn't make any sense. I don't know what you're talking about when you call him the Pan. Now, my question for you, bud, once again, is how was Peter Pan a positive influence on you?
I told you already that Peter Pan flew and everything, and it just seemed like a good, you know, thing to fantasize about.
Okay. That's good enough. I mean, you kind of went off in your own imagination.
What do you mean, fantasize about the Pan? Wow, man, that is so gay.
What did I tell you about that?
Shut up!
Hey, what did I tell you about that?
I mean, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say that.
Talk about me fantasizing about Pan. You probably did.
Hey, I'm gonna fire you guys. Maybe that'll get some sense into you, okay? Do you want that?
No.
Uh-uh.
You fantasizing about the Pan? What is it with you guys? Speak English! The point that I'm making here is that Disney, this company, you know, that Ted was talking about, like we owe so much to. Look, business is business, as they say. I don't even think Disney would have endorsed what Ted was saying tonight. Wall Street media analysts are predicting this film, this John Carter. And I'm telling you, for those of you who are living in cities, we're talking to you tonight where the movie maybe hasn't gotten to yet, because they open it sometimes in bigger cities, and then it slowly makes its way into medium markets, down into smaller markets. That's kind of how they roll these things out. I want to tell you right now, and I ain't kidding, about 3 weeks ago, I saw billboards on the freeway. You know, I'm driving around, I'm going to work, whatever I'm doing. And I saw these billboards, and I said, what the hell is that? There was a thing, it said, John Carter. And it had what looked from a distance to be two gorillas, and between them was a man. And I said, "This John Carter, is that a TV show? Maybe he's the first thing I thought was he's like a zoo guy, you know, like some cat that, like that Steve Irwin guy that wrestles animals. You know, remember Steve Irwin?
Yeah, that guy's great.
Well, I thought this guy went into the wild and, you know, talked to gorillas or something. John Carter. And as I got closer to it, then I saw that these were not gorillas. They were aliens from another world. Okay, great, fine, terrific. So that nonsense continued. Well, what the hell is this? Now I realize, okay, it's some movie that's coming out. I didn't know it was Disney. And I had not yet seen any TV. And I'll tell you right now, I don't know how much TV they bought, man, but I don't remember seeing one damn commercial for that movie.
Well, that man, they had them all a lot for about a week.
Well, that may be. Maybe I don't watch enough TV. I don't remember one damn commercial. Maybe once for that movie. And it's an Edgar Rice Burroughs book. You're right. And I don't know what that's about. But I'll tell you, it was the worst. And I mean the single worst pre-opening publicity and media campaign for a Disney movie I'd ever seen. They're usually really good. Disney's usually solid gold about how they roll their movies out. So now, after a $250 million budget, you know.
Yeah, but you know something? It's like Dan was saying, they'll make it back.
Yeah, because the movie's pretty good, you know.
Well, you know, that may be true. I mean, people are probably going to find this movie a lot slower than they ordinarily would. And when they do see it, they're probably going to love it. And it'll probably get pretty good word of mouth. I don't know what the word of mouth on it is now. Maybe it's not all that good, but who knows? There's a bunch of stupid critics that work in L.A. and New York, and all they do is look at each other's reviews. I don't even really know if they care whether the movie's good. But the media, Wall Street analysts are saying that Walt Disney could lose $100 million to $165 million on John Carter, its big-budget Martian adventure film. $100 to $165 million they'll lose on a $250 million movie. The Martian adventure John Carter appears to be heading, in the words of one financial analyst, to the red ink planet.
What's that mean?
The red planet is Mars?
Yeah.
Red Ink has lost money.
Oh.
Wall Street media analyst said the studio could lose $100 million to $165 million on its big-budget epic. We normally would not be changing estimates prior to a movie opening, Alan Gould, senior media and entertainment analyst at Evercore Partners, wrote in an investor note published Friday. But given the tracking reports, the reviews, and high profile of this picture, we feel there is little risk in adjusting our estimate early. Gould more than doubled his earlier estimate of the studio's loss of the film to $165 million. The costliest box office flops of all time. Aside from the output at Pixar and Marvel, the company appears to have put itself in a fairly tight box with only a couple of major films per year that are also expected to be Disney-branded franchise films. About a year ago, Disney released the box office dud Mars Needs Moms. Joy. The 3D animated movie, which cost a reported $150 million, grossed just $21.4 million at the domestic box office. Kagan, one of these analysts, noted John Carter could still outperform predictions and do well overseas where audiences respond to big-budget 3D epics.
How come all the Chinese dig that?
What do you mean all the Chinese?
Yeah, they do, man. Well, Chinese and Japanese. I think it's on account of the A-bomb.
Yeah, I think the A-bomb made them want to see stuff in 3D if they don't already.
Yeah, you know, bud, don't talk so disrespectfully.
Well, I didn't do nothing.
Just take it easy. Anyway, what makes the film risky? They drop so many A-bombs, they see stuff in 3D. What makes the film risky is not so much its century-old source material or its relatively unknown cast or even the fact that it represents the first live-action film from director Andrew Stanton, who previously helmed Finding Nemo and Wall-E, wrote Kagan, analysts. Rather, the danger comes from the movie's gargantuan budget. Wow. I remember when they made Waterworld, it was like $200 million, and everybody was ready to just... flip out on that. And
you ever see that?
I saw Waterworld, but I didn't see it all the way through. You know, but what I saw was, it was okay. You know, it's kind of interesting, man. I mean, this guy, you know, the world is covered with water, and there's this one dude played by Kevin Costner who's out there on this catamaran, and he represents the next stage in man's evolution. He starts to have gills. He notices that he's got gills, you know. And he's doing battle with some floating tyrant played by Dennis Hopper and this whole cast of scallywag and, you know, typically futuristic Mad Max on the water weird asses. And they live in some super fortress out in the water. I don't know, man. I remember having kind of a good time watching it, but not being able to figure this crap out very much.
Yeah, the gills, he could breathe underwater.
Yeah, he could breathe underwater. I think that was very pivotal in the plot. All right, coming back here on a world-famous Phil Henry show. And there was an arrest in those powder letters from Portland, Oregon that were sent to Congress. They busted some jackass. We'll talk to you about it when we come back in the Phil Henry show.
Phil Henry. You're listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
And welcome back here to the world famous Phil Henry Show on this Saturday morning. Well, it's a weekend, and it's going to be a good one, too, because we have our L.A. Animation Festival to attend tonight. And I actually get a two-day weekend and get out of the El Pacifico for a little bit and go into Los Angeles. And by the way, the name of the voice of SpongeBob SquarePants Bud is Tom Kenny.
That's the guy. I knew I've done a tip of my tongue.
Okay. Tom Kenny, and he was the host of the opening night ceremonies. Arrest in threatening letters sent to Congress. A 39-year-old jackass was arrested on Friday in connection with threatening letters containing a suspicious powdery substance that were sent to members of Congress. The United States Capitol Police said in a statement that Christopher Lee Carlson was arrested at his home in the Portland, Oregon area. No further details about where the home was located was immediately available. Authorities say Carlson faces charges related to the mailing of a threatening communication and threatened use of biological weapon. This arrest was the result of a joint investigation between the U.S. Capitol Police, the FBI, and the U.S. Postal Inspection Service. Over the past few weeks, these agencies recovered a number of threatening letters sent to U.S. senators and representatives. The letters tested negative for toxic substances. The letters, which were just sent to several media organizations, told the recipients that there is a 10% chance you have just been exposed to a lethal pathogen. The letters bore a return address from the MIB and were postmarked Portland. The Portland return address on the letters appeared to be a phony. The sender wanted an end to corporate money and lobbying and an end to corporate personhood and a new constitutional convention. The Associated Press obtained a copy of one of the letters. The threats raised memories of post-9/11 incidents that rattled Washington in November of 2001. Authorities closed two Senate office buildings then after anthrax attacks on Congress. And you remember the guy that was supposedly responsible for that wound up committing suicide, some real weird ass that worked near the Army or worked in the Army lab. And had a this guy that sent those anthrax, what the hell is his name anyway? I don't have it on the tip of my tongue here, but the guy that sent the anthrax, yeah, I know that he committed suicide and they don't know whether he did or not. Okay. But point being that he worked with that particular strain of anthrax. He worked at a lab that was right across the street from the post box, or what do you call it, mailbox, that was just contaminated with anthrax spores. He had dropped the letters in this mailbox. And either he worked very near that mailbox, or, then this is really weird, there's a sorority that he had been involved with when he was in college. A number of the women in this sorority, or one of the women in the sorority, he was involved with and apparently didn't like this sorority. You know, I've never heard of anything like this before in my life. Some guy, some dude, having a problem with a particular sorority. And, I mean, it goes on for years. This guy had a problem with the sorority. And as it turns out, I think the mailbox that, the mailbox that these things were mailed from was either very close to this one of these sorority houses or where the guy was working. But there was a trail there that you wouldn't know existed unless you, you know, eventually began to put the pieces of the puzzle together. So these threats of this Oregon clown, what's this guy's name? Have they released this guy's name? They haven't, huh? Oh, yeah, they have. Christopher Lee Carlson. The threats raised memories of post 9/11 incidents that rattled Washington. Those attacks came after four people, two postal workers in Washington, a New York City hospital worker, and a Florida photo editor died from exposure to anthrax. So there's all kinds of crazy people, especially when things are scary or... And I got to tell you, man, it's almost boring now hearing people talking about the apocalyptic scenarios. It almost, I yawn when I hear people say black helicopters. You know, I'm freaking yawning, man, when I hear these jackasses talking about Big Brother and the government this and the government that. Let me just say this. Those people don't know their ass from a hole in the ground. And I'm telling you, anybody that talks about Big Brother, black helicopters, or any combination thereof doesn't know a thing about A, history, B, current events, or frankly, C, what constitutes society and what makes a society work and what makes a society break down and exactly what are the key things that must happen. Do those things exist even in the extreme in American society? You know, there's a lot of stuff. In order to be a futurist, you really got to bring some stuff into play. And that's what these people are trying to do. Now, ever since the economy started to go south after the meltdown of the banks, we saw a resurgence of these people talking about the future. The future, the future looks black. Oh, the future looks black. Oh, the future. And it gets so tiresome because I've been hearing that since I was a kid. I mean, I ain't kidding you, man. Ever since I was a kid, there have been people talking about how horrific the future looks. And somehow, some way, we find ourselves into the future, you know, and things are cool. So, but when it gets talked about like that, and the panic sets in among some people. You have them either running off to the hills, or what else are they doing? They're, forming some cult. They're doing this. They're doing that. They're doing some other stupid, silly thing. If you ever want to laugh yourself sick, and I laughed my ass off. I laughed my ass off. Somebody made a film about what was going to happen after Y2K. And this film is available now on one of the online archives. I think, I forget the name of this one archive that I go to, but it's Internet Archives. And this film was made with a straight face. And the people that made this film wanted you to know that they got it right, even if you laughed at them. And what did they get right? The collapse of society on January the 1st, 2000, because of the Y2K bug. All of the electricity was going to go out. All of the security apparatus or apparati in America, all of that would go south. Mayhem and insanity would rule the day. And they illustrated this by way of this bunker that they're in. And there's an argument between the husband and the wife. The wife, it's taking it deadly serious. The husband thinks it's a big joke. But okay, honey, we're down here like you wanted us to be. Ha ha. And as midnight hits and the electricity goes out, suddenly their generator kicks on. So, they were smart. And now someone has shut down the generator and has busted through the door. And what is it? An escaped convict from a prison, like they predicted, who would come in and rape and kill and eat all of your canned goods. And that's what happened in the movie. Basically, the theme of the movie being this. We were prepared, and look what happened to us. And you laughed? Ha, 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 ha. Kind of a Noah's Ark thing, you know, where everybody laughed at Noah with the Ark, and the next thing you know, he's the only guy that's got anything that floats other than Natalie Wood.
Da, ha, ha.
I'm kidding. Well, the same thing with this movie, and I watched this, and I thought, boy, the absolute hubris, the arrogance of these jackasses that keep predicting. Do yourself a favor. Instead of predicting and running off and getting scared and hiding, start doing some work. Go rake some leaves. Change the oil in your car. Read a book. Take a trip. Take two trips. Take an acid trip. Something constructive. I honestly believe that between the two, dropping acid or becoming a survivalist, I think dropping acid is far more productive.
Why?
Because you're doing something that, is like mind expanding. The other stuff, it's mind shrinking.
Yeah, it's mind shriveling.
That good. Mind shriveling. Thank you, bud.
That a mind shriveling activity will be a survivalist?
Yeah, but I mean, they got a show now on whatever the hell channel it is. I think it's National Geographic. He says, I'm not a survivalist. I'm a something like I'm a. He's not just surviving. He is he's a survivalist.
What's that mean?
He's going to thrive. He's not just surviving. He's going to thrive. So I looked at this. I thought, okay, well, these people are not really talking about an end of days scenario. These people are just a modern day hippy dippy back to nature thing.
No, man, because a lot of them people, they got guns and stuff.
Well, I said it's more of a modern thing. It's not a total hippy dippy thing, but it has more to do with hippies than it does with, you know, World War III panic in the year zero, man. Okay?
What do you mean panic in the year zero?
That was an old movie that I saw. It was about an A-bomb. But you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I mean, you say they're hippie like they're all, they don't think the end of the world coming?
Well, I mean, look, the freaks that went out on the communes, they thought the end of the world was coming in a lot of ways. They didn't say it, but they would say, this is a way better way to live. This is a healthier way to live. This is a thing we should do because the cities suck. There's too much smog. Look at all the animals that live there, blah, blah, blah. So in a lot of ways, it was kind of a survivalist thing. It didn't have the extreme tones that survivalists sometimes take on. It didn't have the extreme rhetoric that survivalists engage in sometimes. If survivalists just shut off all that horse dung and get to the real point of what they're doing, it ain't about World War III. It's really about leaving the city and going out and living groovy. And believe me, I got nothing against that, man. Hell, I got nothing against somebody being a survivalist. What I got against are the big fat mouths they got talking about stuff they don't know anything about. And they, believe me when I tell you, they don't know their ass from a hole in the ground.
That, why can you say that, man? They studied up on it and everything.
What have they studied up on? What have they studied up on?
Well, I mean, like a breakdown of society and all that stuff.
The breakdown of society, is that right? Is that what they've studied up on? And where, show me a society, a modern society, a modern technical society, technological society, that has broken down to the extent that they think the U.S. society will, and to the point where they'll need these survival camps. Where is it? Show me the model that they're working from.
Well, I mean, like, if the A-bomb hit, and like, in Germany and stuff.
In Germany? What the hell are you talking about, man? There was a war-torn country. They had an army of occupation. See, in other words, these people are working from comic books. That's what I swear to God. Their brains are just soft from too many comic books. But if they would just knock it off with that stuff, and that's why I'm very interested in seeing this survivalist thing, you know?
Yeah, those people are probably talking about, like, going out and just, you know, having, like you were saying, living on the land.
Yeah, that's what they're doing. Yeah, that's cool. I mean, I could get with that. I'd go out and visit and stuff. I mean, as long as they're not paranoid and going to take shots at me as I'm coming up the road. Some of that jazz, but...
Talk about like a white supremacies.
Yeah, those guys are way off the freaking deep end. No, I'm talking these people who... They're getting out of the city, and yeah, sure, survivalists. Yeah, tell me all about it, Charlie. Really, what you're talking about is you're just tired of living in the city. And, you know, in a lot of ways, they're coming at the green thing from a different angle. You know, they're not coming at it from the Ed Begley Jr., green kind of thing, you know, which is, you know, I'm a member of this, I'm a member of a society that I'm trying to heal. They're sort of coming at green from I am, divorcing myself from that. So I'm going to go out to the woods, and we're going to live, and we're going to, you know, as the guy said, thrive. So I don't know what that means. But I suspect that it's got more to do with just getting away from an unhealthy environment into creating a healthy environment, as opposed to, oh, gosh, we better flee.
Yeah, because the end of the world coming.
Yeah, we better flee because the end of the world's coming. I doubt seriously if any of those people, especially the guys that are going to be on this reality show, you know, I mean... To the crew at a reality show. You guys really believe this crap? Not really. Well, here's your check. Thank you. All right, we'll come back here for our final segment of the world-famous Phil Henry Show. And don't forget to visit us online at philhenryshow.com. Lots of new stuff to enjoy over at philhenryshow.com. You need a backstage pass for all of it. So make sure you grab your backstage pass at philhenryshow.com and become a member of our family.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. It's the Phil Henry Show.
That's how dare you, bud.
What?
Talking about people being, you know, I've got nothing against Jesus. People want to believe in Jesus. That's fantastic. It's religion. It's what comforts us. Religion is a destructive and horrific thing in the hands of people who use it, who wield it to control the actions of other people that may not believe what they believe. And a lot of people say, well, you know, how come you don't like Santorum again? Anytime any politician says some of the things that I've heard Santorum say, along the lines of, well, you know, there's man's law, but there's also God's law. Don't give me that. I know there's God's law. I know you believe in God's law. You have a right to believe in God's law. And I want God's law to be, you know, right there next to you when you need it. But don't you tell me that anything supersedes my Constitution and the laws of the United States of America. That is what I know. That's what I see. That's what I can hold on to. That's what I can enact and enforce. And I see that that works, and that is what we're going to do. And you can have all of your religion that you want, but the minute you tell me that your religion supersedes my law, we got a problem. And, of course, we have to protect ourselves from religious zealots. Of course we have to protect ourselves from these people who think that they're going to say, well, now, the Founding Fathers never intended. Don't tell me what the Founding Fathers intended. Don't start preaching to me about what the founding fathers believed. I've read more letters and I've read more journal entries and I've read more essays from Hamilton to Washington to Paine to Jefferson. And I am telling you, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know where you're getting. Some of you people are getting some of these ideas. Those men and others had contempt for religion. Contempt. Yeah, they believed in God. But they had nothing but absolute contempt for the religious institutions that had come to represent so much control in Europe. This separation of church and state. Yeah, they wanted people to be able to worship as they wished. Yes, you're absolutely right. But don't ever kid yourself into thinking that they were not aware of the reverse. They were very much aware of the reverse, where religion begins to control. Washington himself would take out of letters to the Continental Congress references to God. One other thing that really, I didn't think people were this uneducated, but I guess I'm going to have to say it. The Declaration of Independence, that's not U.S. law.
What are you talking about?
Just what I said. You want me to repeat it? The Declaration of Independence is not U.S. law. The Declaration of Independence is a Declaration of Independence from Britain. It has nothing to do with the law that we now have in place as articulated by the Constitution of the United States of America. That's American law. The Declaration of Independence was about a Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, but I mean, what about all people being created equal and stuff?
That's the philosophy behind our government. But what enforces that are the amendments to the Constitution itself. You can say all people are created equal, and that's just marvelous. But unless you have law that enforces that, and we do, you ain't got diddly squat, man.
What are you talking about? What law?
The law that guarantees everybody can vote. The law that guarantees everybody has the right to public accommodations. The law that says people, not only do we believe people are equal, but we treat them equal. And if we don't, we fix that. You know, it said all people are created equal. Oh, really? Well, women couldn't vote. Slaves couldn't vote. So we had a problem there, didn't we? We got this Constitution. We got this Declaration of Independence that is all groovy, but it doesn't mean jack because it hasn't got any force of law. So we had to write it into the law. Anyway, I don't think too many people are that buggy about that stuff. But I just wanted to, you know, give you a heads up on that.
What about Disney?
Yeah, Disney was... Get out of here. Yeah, they wrote Disney into the Constitution. There must be an amusement park. There must be theme parks on both coasts. All right. Real fun. Lots of fun. Great groovy time, folks. Next week, we are going to... We'll give you a little more information on another episode of New Girl that I'll be involved in. Boy, what a great time and what a great bunch of people at New Girl on Fox. Zoe Deschanel and Jake Johnson and Max Greenfield and Lamorne Morris and Hannah Simone. The cast, they've been great, fun to be with, and they've been such nice people and real pros, and they really love what they do. So it shows. So next week I'm going to be involved in another episode of that. Who knows, man? We may become a regular cast member if all goes well.
What, do you got to pay somebody to do that? That's what I'd do.
Yeah, sure. Pay somebody? Believe me, if that's what it took. The world-famous Phil Henry Show is produced by Dan Northcraft and Phil Henry. Join us at philhenryshow.com. You know, philhenryshow.com is the strong right arm of the world-famous Phil Henry Show. That is where you go and get live streaming video of this show each and every night. You can also listen to hours and hours and hours of archive material at philhenryshow.com. And now we have our home movies, Henry Family Home Movies. So go on over there and take a look at those, man. It's kind of a beautiful thing. It was fun looking at them, and it was kind of, I don't know, man. It was sort of, I don't know. It felt like bittersweet. That's the word.
Yeah. Nice coming up with it.
Thank you. It was bittersweet.
Phil Henry.